This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Sky Pass Entertainment's new movie, The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story. The Least of These, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13, in theaters February 1st. More information is available at theleastofthese.movie.
This is Janet Mefford Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Mefford.
Hello, everybody. Great to have you with us again. Not so great the way New York lawmakers commemorated the anniversary of Roe v. Wade yesterday. Quite upsetting to see the lawmakers in the Senate passing this radical pro-abortion bill. It's called the Reproductive Health Act. Of course it's euphemistic, because that's what they do. They hide behind euphemisms. They don't want to say, let's kill more babies in the womb. They say, we want to protect women's reproductive health care rights. You know, you don't have to be euphemistic if you really believe what you're doing is moral. Why don't you just say, we're fine with killing children in the womb. Let's just call it the Killing More Children in the Womb Bill. But they don't do that because they know that doesn't sound so good, but they know that's what they're actually doing. So here's the latest via Life News. This bill passed in the Senate after abortion activists pushed it for more than a decade. So this thing has been more than 10 years in the making. Until now, it failed to pass the state Senate because of Republican lawmakers. But due to the last election, more pro-abortion Democrats were put in. And so now they control both houses in the New York Assembly. The vote was 38 to 24. A New York public radio reporter said she heard a voice shout, "May Almighty God have mercy on this state." Good line. I agree. The legislation goes beyond Roe v. Wade, allowing abortions even when the Supreme Court has said states may regulate them. Late-term abortions, which currently are illegal in New York, would be allowed. And non-doctors would be allowed to perform them. Non-doctors. Now, why is this the case? Well, the reason it's the case is because, as one of the, I think it was the Attorney General in New York was saying recently, we have a shortage of doctors who will perform abortions. Right, they've been decimated because great pro-life groups like Operation Rescue have been working to expose these clinics and go after these abortionists. And, you know, they get arrested and then they're charged and then the clinics close. And there were over 2,100 clinics at one time in the United States, and now that's way under 1,000. So we're making great progress toward eliminating abortion in the United States. And these radicals are all upset about it. So, oh, we got to do something. We got to save the abortion industry. You know, nobody wants to go into abortionist work. It's a hard field to get good doctors to go into because most doctors, thank the Lord, want to save lives and heal people. They don't want to kill people. And rightfully so. So these radicals have to do something. You have to pander to the feminists. You have to pander to those who want to have sex without consequences. And so let's just expand it all. So non-doctors would be allowed to perform abortions now in New York, assuming Governor Cuomo signs it into law, which he's already said he will. So this is a done deal, folks. The bill appears to restrict late-term abortions, Life News points out, but it adds a broad health exception, quote-unquote health exception, for abortions after 24 weeks. Now, keep in mind, a baby can feel pain at 20 weeks gestation. Pain. So you dismember a baby at 20 weeks or further along in the pregnancy, and that baby feels everything. That baby feels everything. It's a far cry from this Maris poll that came out recently showing 75% of Americans at most want abortion to stop after the first trimester, because more and more people are recognizing that abortion really is murder, and they justify it. Those people who really still cling to this ridiculous idea of choice other than the life of an innocent child, they kind of justify it by saying, well, at least it's not a fully formed human yet. And are they really persons at that stage of the pregnancy? And maybe if you eliminate the pregnancy early on, then it's just a clump of cells. There are a lot of people who convince themselves of that. It's not true. You're conceived and you're a human being from the moment of conception. We have some work to do on some of those people. But at least 75% of Americans get it, that you shouldn't be murdering children who can feel pain. But these radicals don't care. They don't care about any of that. This exception they're putting into place would allow women to abort unborn babies up to 9 months of pregnancy for age, economic, social, and emotional factors, rather than the biological definition of health that normally comes to mind, emotional factors. Well, I'm really upset. I'm 8 months pregnant. Okay, you can go ahead and kill your child. How do you even put your mind around such evil? The state Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins celebrated the legislation at a press conference. She claimed the so-called right to abortion is threatened by the new conservative U.S. Supreme Court. Yeah, they're a big threat. Okay. Pro-abortion Governor Andrew Cuomo, of course, supports the bill. He even went so far as to threaten to hold up the budget until the legislature passes it. The Reproductive Health Act redefines a person as a human being who has been born and is alive. Kind of reminds me a little bit of the Obergefell decision, in that redefining what is already defined seems to be the hallmark of these radicals. Marriage is between a man and a woman. It's a lifelong covenant in which you form a family and you have children. That's what marriage is. And God designed it and God put it into place, and it's not changeable and you can't redefine it. And they think they can actually redefine reality. That's kind of the hallmark of modern radical progressives. And what are they doing here? They're redefining a person. Oh, really? Are you now God? You can figure out what a person is better than God can? Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Give me a break here. Anyway, they define, redefine a person as a human being who has been born and is alive. So you're not a person if you're one day away from being born. Now, think, all you women who have had children, all of you moms out there, all of you grandmas out there, think about what life was like for you when you were almost ready to deliver. I remember those days really well. And those are the days when you're lying on the couch and you've got your feet up on the pillow and your ankles are swollen and you're saying to your husband, I just want her to come, or I just want him to come. I just want to have this baby. I'm so uncomfortable. I can't sleep. My ankles are swollen. You want that baby to come, but you're not saying, if only these cells would present themselves. Nobody is saying that. You know, it's a baby, you know, and you look at the gestational age of some of these babies whose lives are able to be saved. It's incredible what modern medicine has been able to accomplish when it comes to saving the lives of preborn babies. These radicals know that. These radicals know that. So they've got to recreate reality, even though it doesn't work that way. They also point out at Life News that the legislation poses serious dangers to women's lives and also their rights. And why is that? Well, they say that by removing protections from illegal abortions, the bill will open the door for abuses. According to New York Right to Life, back alley abortionists, abusive partners or parents, and others no longer would face charges for illegally killing an unborn baby, even if the mother wanted her child. Now, why would you put that into the law in New York? According to Catholic News Service, in early December, a resident of Saratoga County was arrested for punching the stomach of a woman who was 26 weeks pregnant in an attempt to cause a miscarriage. The man was charged with abortion in the second degree, but under this new Reproductive Health Act, the attacker would not have been charged with a felony. So you could just kill a baby. I guess that goes back to the same shortage of abortion doctors that they're so worried about in New York. Protections for babies born alive, and this is the worst part. Protections for babies born alive after botched abortions also would end under this new bill. Incredible. Additionally, the bill says the state cannot deny, regulate, or restrict abortion, not even for common sense reasons like parental consent for minors, informed consent, or limits on taxpayer-funded abortions. New York State Right to Life predicted that the bill will lead to the suppression of pro-lifers' freedom of speech and conscience as well. Doctors and nurses who refuse to help abort unborn babies could lose their jobs, and pro-life advocates could be persecuted for just speaking out for life. Now, New York would become even more pro-abortion under this law. In 2016, over 82,000 unborn babies were aborted in New York, with about half being taxpayer-funded. And of those babies, 1,763 were at least 20 weeks, meaning they may have been viable outside the womb. Now, we're going to get into more on what Governor Cuomo has had to say about his philosophy on all this. We're going to come back on Janet Mefford Today after this. Genesis 1 tells us God created man in his image. Male and female, he created them. The Bible is clear that human life is God-given and valuable. But as we know, not everybody in our country believes that. It's why more than 1 million preborn babies are killed in the womb every year because of the scourge of abortion. During the Sanctity of Human Life Month, would you help us save human lives? We're partnering with the Ministry Preborn this month to try to save 250 preborn babies, and in a very direct and important way. Preborn funds crisis pregnancy centers across America so they can offer free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. Ultrasound is a game changer because when abortion-minded women actually see their babies in their wombs, 80% of the time they choose life. It's one of the best ways to stop abortion. Even better, through the work of Preborn, these women hear the gospel of Jesus Christ, and thousands of them have come to know the Lord. It's a great ministry, but we really need your help. Right now, we've received enough support from Janet Mefford Today listeners to save 115 babies, but that's less than half the number of babies we want to save. It only takes a gift of $28 to provide one ultrasound for one woman who's about to get an abortion. For a gift of $140, you can provide 5 free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. And let me tell you, every gift helps. To donate, please call now, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. During the Sanctity of Human Life Month, let's do more than complain about abortion. Let's stop it in its tracks and reach these moms, not only with the message of life, but with the gospel of Jesus. Please help and call now, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229. Or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Call 855-402-BABY. Thank you. Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. I've been telling you a little bit about what New York just did. The Senate just passed, on the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, mind you, the Reproductive Health Act, which is a very radical pro-abortion measure. This is something that was discussed by Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York just a few days ago, where he was commiserating and hanging out with good old Hillary Clinton. Oh, there's no justice of equality and reproductive rights that Mrs. Clinton will not get behind. So Governor Cuomo totally on that bandwagon. And I wanted to play for you a couple of cuts from this particular gathering. Just pulled a few of these because I think this is very revealing. Governor Cuomo just a few days ago was talking about New York's long history with supporting progressive causes, and also addresses how they enacted most of the women's equality agenda. Listen to cut one.
We passed with the help of the Senate Democrats, the Women's Equality Agenda. It was a breakthrough, and it had 10 points, and we passed 9 of the 10 points. And the 9 points had never been done before. Pay equity, stopping sexual harassment at workplaces, removing barriers to discrimination, ending family status discrimination, housing discrimination, source of income discrimination, which is a major problem. Victims of domestic violence by strengthening order of protections, closing the DV loophole on gun control, and taking guns from people who have DV violations. Strengthening human trafficking laws, stopping pregnancy discrimination once for all. Those were the 9 points. There was one point we couldn't pass of the 10 points because the Republican Senate wouldn't pass it. What was the one point? Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade. Now, at that time, and Senator Cousins was there, and Deborah was there, and Liz was there, the Republican Senate said, You don't need a state law codifying Roe v. Wade. No administration would ever roll back Roe v. Wade. So help me God, this was the conversation, you remember. This was only 2 years ago. The Republican Senate says no administration would do this.
Interesting how he throws in the phrase, so help me God. Well, you do need God's help, Governor Cuomo. By the way, I was looking on the National Organization for Women website, which listed this 10-point agenda for women's equality. And this is what it said about that point 10 he referenced, protecting a woman's freedom of choice. Here's what it says. New York should remain a national leader on protecting a woman's fundamental right to reproductive freedom. Nice euphemistic reference there. And to making private health care decisions. A woman facing an unplanned or problem pregnancy should have the opportunity to make the best decision for herself and her family, whether her decision is to continue a pregnancy, adoption, or abortion. WEA will bring our state law into alignment with current federal law so that women are guaranteed access to abortion if their life or health is in danger. It will also take the regulation of abortion out of our criminal laws and put it into the public health law where it belongs. So now they've got it, I guess. Just waiting for the governor's signature. So he was referencing the fact that the Republicans in the Senate had stopped this from going through before. And then he reiterates the Republicans said no sane administration would touch Roe v. Wade. And Cuomo said, well, they're right. And went on. This is cut two.
What I missed was the possibility that we could elect an insane administration. And that's what we have. We have an extreme conservative agenda in Washington. It's their morality. It's their interpretation of religion. It's their interpretation of ethics. And they're going to impose it on you. Which, by the way, in this upside down world, is a total repudiation of conservative theory. Because remember what the conservatives said, limited government. Limited federal government, because the federal government, they don't know anything. State government, local government, people's rights, but limited government. This is a weird perversion of that, where they're extreme conservative in their social views, but they're highly aggressive in their imposition of those views on states and people.
Okay. All right, Governor Cuomo. I'm not really sure to what he is referring there. He was referencing the fact that the Trump administration was all about putting conservative judges on the bench. And certainly Justice Kavanaugh got the fight of a lifetime when they tried to actually put him on the bench and succeeded. But here's the thing. No conservative is looking at the Supreme Court and saying, gee, if they just overturn Roe v. Wade, abortion will finally be illegal in all 50 states and we'll go back to pre-Roe v. Wade days. That's not what's going to happen. And conservatives understand this a lot better than liberals do. What will have to happen is if Roe v. Wade is ever overturned, and I'm not so sure that would ever happen in the near future, but if it were overturned, all it would do is toss the abortion question back to the states. And here's New York passing its own law. So we hate what you're doing, New York, but you have the right to do it. And we see what's happened in Alabama and Mississippi, and they have the right to uphold life. So that's what should have happened in the first place, because Roe v. Wade was a horrible decision, which can't stand up constitutionally. And even people who are very strong on the issue of abortion and very supportive of abortion have said, law professors at Yale and elsewhere have talked about what horrible, you know, constitutional interpretation took place during the Roe v. Wade decision and Harry Blackmun and all the rest. We've talked about that before. But here he is talking about imposing morality and they're terrible and this extreme conservative agenda and all the rest. It's just funny how these people can get the Obergefell decision forced on 32 states that passed marriage protection in their state constitutions. And that's fine. But it is the presence of Justice Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court that somehow is the imposing of morality on the country. No, you know what it is? They don't want anything to interrupt the sexual revolution. Bingo. That's exactly what they're doing. And they ought to be honest about it, but I've long passed my expectation that they would ever be honest about something like that. So now I want to play one more cut. This is Governor Cuomo laying out the reason that New York is acting to protect abortion at all costs. This is cut three.
Kavanaugh is going to reverse Roe v. Wade. I have no doubt. Gorsuch is going to reverse Roe v. Wade. I have no doubt. So what do? Protect ourselves. Pass a state law that is a prophylactic from the federal action, and that means pass Roe, Reproductive Health Act, and the Contraceptive Care Act.
God help this country. Seriously, God help this country, if that's how you're thinking. And by the way, I am not convinced whatsoever that Justice Kavanaugh and Justice Gorsuch and the rest of the justices on the Supreme Court will overturn Roe v. Wade. I have no faith that they're going to do that in any way, shape, or form in the near future. I just don't have any faith they're going to do that. Really? They want to be the court that overturns Roe v. Wade? They should. That would be the right decision. That would be the right interpretation of the Constitution to say this is ridiculous. This is a lousy decision. It needs to be overturned. But you would have to have the exact right case and the exact right conditions in order to do that. And plus, you have the political factor. We'd love to think that the Supreme Court is not influenced by politics. And the Obergefell decision alone ought to show you that that's just ridiculous. Of course they're influenced by politics. When you have Kennedy going on and on and on about, oh, we have to stand up for the dignity of people who should have equality in marriage. You just scratch your head and say, what planet are you living on? Did you take a biology class at any point in your life, Justice Kennedy? Good grief. And I got to say this too, because when we're looking at this through a biblical lens, we have to consider what the Word of God says. And I went back to a website, Compelling Truth, which addressed this issue of Molech. Now, you may know the name Molech. Molech was this ancient god worshipped by the people neighboring Israel in the Old Testament. And it says, while much about Molech's nature and origin are uncertain, the Bible mentions Molech on 8 occasions. The first mention of Molech is in Leviticus 18:21, in which the Lord commanded, you shall not give any of your children to offer them to Molech, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. The worship of Molech clearly involved ritual child sacrifice, something that God's people were not to practice, and the act actually was punishable by death, according to Leviticus 20, verse 2. And there are other references as well. And when you get to Josiah in 2 Kings and the rediscovery of the book of the law, and all of a sudden Josiah, this righteous king, says, we have a book of the law we haven't been following. And he deals with the Molech problem, and he starts, you know, bashing in idols and making sure that the people of God return to the worship of God as prescribed in his book of the law. And so you see what happens in the Old Testament. It's so important for us as Christians to recognize we have to do everything we can to save lives and obey the Lord. This is why we support the ministry of preborn. And I just want to encourage you, please help us. We are trying to save 250 preborn babies through these free ultrasounds that preborn helps to make possible at crisis pregnancy centers across the country. This is a great way to save human lives. So if you can give a gift of $28 today, you'll be providing a free ultrasound for a woman in a crisis pregnancy. And we've said again and again, 8 out of 10 women who get these ultrasounds choose life. Here's the number to call, 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229, 855-402-BABY. Or there is a banner to click at janetmefford.com. We really want to get to this 250 number and save 250 preborn babies. We do need your help. We're running out of time till the end of the month during the Sanctity of Human Life Month. Please help us out if you could. 855-402-BABY is the number, or there's a banner to click at janetmefford.com. Remember, all gifts are tax deductible, and 100% of your gift goes directly to saving babies. We'll be right back. This Janet Mefford Today podcast is brought to you by Preborn. We're wanting to save 250 preborn babies this January by offering free ultrasounds to women in crisis pregnancies. You can help by calling 855-402-BABY. That's 855-402-2229 or janetmefford.com. back to Janet Meffer today. Now we are going to turn some of our attention to the latest attempts to undermine the Second Amendment. The Second Amendment Foundation actually has just filed suit over Missouri's firearms prohibition on state residents who are foster parents or wish to be foster parents. And this comes amid news about two Democrat gun bills that, as the Federalists put it, need to be fought like the Dickens because they are merely interim stops on the way toward the goal of gun confiscation. So we are joined now by Alan Gottlieb, founder and executive vice president of the Second Amendment Foundation. Alan, so great to have you with us. How are you?
I'm great. It's good to be back with you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. Well, first of all, I'm intrigued about this lawsuit that you guys just filed in federal district court. Can you tell us a little bit about what's been going on in Missouri with foster parents and being able to legally carry firearms and have firearms?
I sure will. And this isn't just, you know, only to Missouri. It's actually, we have two other cases, one in Illinois and one in Michigan that are very similar to this. So this is a trend around the country where bureaucrats embedded in state government decide that if you want to be a foster parent, you cannot have a functional firearm in your home or your car or any place where the foster children might be, even though you might be licensed to own the gun, licensed to carry the gun, and have expert training. You're not allowed to have a firearm to protect yourself or your family. And so we have filed suit in Western District Court, federal court in Missouri, along with two plaintiffs, James and Julie Attaway, a couple who are licensed foster care providers, and they currently foster parents to one child and have their own children as well. They're licensed to carry concealed firearms. They have a permit to do so. But the law in Missouri Department of Social Services has a policy that does not allow them to have a loaded functional firearm anywhere in their home while they're foster parents, which takes away their Second Amendment rights.
Right.
You shouldn't have to lose your Second Amendment rights just because you want to help take care of children.
Well, no. What is the reasoning behind that?
Well, again, this is where anti-gun, you know, gun rights people get involved, you know, in government, in bureaucracy, and try to put their will and you know, destroy the Second Amendment rights of other people into state code. Their argument, of course, is that, well, guns are evil and horrible, and they shouldn't be in a home where there are children. There's no law against that, obviously, and you have a constitutional right to have a gun in your own home by two U.S. Supreme Court decisions, one the McDonald versus Chicago case that was brought by the Second Amendment Foundation, and this is a total violation of that.
Yeah.
And so we're in federal court, you know, to get rid of this ordinance. We had a similar case in Oklahoma that we filed, but the state of Oklahoma withdrew their regulations and ordinance before the judge could rule in our favor. And we have two more cases, and again, two other states. These are Midwestern states that usually aren't necessarily all hostile to gun ownership. But when anti-gun bureaucrats get involved in the government and they can hide, you know, in their offices and put in regulations into law that affect, you know, normal average people trying to exercise their constitutional rights, we have to jump into action.
Well, right. You think about when you have just natural children in your home, biological children in your home, if you own a firearm because you want to be able to protect those children, should somebody break in and threaten their lives, wouldn't this actually be an argument in favor of protecting foster care children? I mean, obviously, if you have a firearm, you should keep it locked up and make sure children can't get it. But is that argument ever brought up that actually you should allow me to protect these foster care children?
Well, that is one of the arguments we are raising. The Supreme Court has said you have the means to have a firearm in your own home that's functional for self-protection of you and your family. And a foster child basically, you know, it becomes a part of your extended family.
Right, exactly. So how do you expect this to go? I know you have mentioned that you guys have fought these sorts of regulations in other states. Has this been universally successful when you fought these regulations elsewhere? And do you expect that this will be rectified?
I expect we'll win this. It'll be rectified. We won it in Oklahoma and in Michigan and Illinois. We have two cases. The state moved to dismiss our challenges, and the judges said no, and they're proceeding to trial. I expect to win all these cases.
Good. I'm really glad that you're doing this because this is important. We can't have our constitutional rights stripped just because a state has some kind of, you know, idea that, oh, well, here we could kind of restrict gun ownership. It doesn't make any sense. I wanted to get your take also, Alan, on what's been going on federally. We saw Senators Dianne Feinstein, Chris Murphy, Richard Blumenthal put together this introduction of the assault weapons ban of 2019. This is an updated bill to ban the sale, transfer, manufacture, and importation of military-style assault weapons, as they call them, and high-capacity ammunition magazines. What is your take on what they're doing now? I mean, we've seen a lot of this all before, but what is your take on it?
Well, obviously, I don't think it's going to go anywhere in the Senate. There are companion bills being introduced in the House, and my concern is that they could pass in the House of Representatives, and if a standalone bill wouldn't really go anywhere, but if it gets put on as an amendment to another bill that the Senate needs to pass, then I'm a little concerned because it's a possibility, you know, a little bit of horse trading to get one bill passed. Okay, I'll give up on gun rights.
Right.
So I'm a little worried about that.
Well, yeah. Now, when we go back to the previous assault weapons ban, which did not work, I think there are a lot of listeners who don't really know the details on that. Can you go back and explain for people why it was the last time the liberals instituted this assault weapons ban that it did not do what they claimed it would do, and it, in fact, didn't do much at all? I mean, this was a failure. That last law was a failure.
Well, it was a total failure. And first of all, the so-called assault weapons are only used in less than 1% of homicides in the United States. So, I mean, the truth of the matter is that no matter what you pass, if it was going to be effective, it wouldn't do much anyway because it's only touching 1% of firearm fatalities, so to speak.
Right.
But what happened when they tried it last time is because they can't go back and confiscate people's guns. So they can't throw the votes for that. So they say they grandfather in the guns you have. So they don't take any guns away from anybody, but they say you can't sell any new ones. And so what happens is before they ever get this thing, if it looks like it's going to pass, what happened last time was a 10-year supply of these firearms were sold in a very short period of time, mm-hmm. and it had a 10-year sunset provision to the law. So all they did was increase and accelerate the sales to begin with, which obviously made the thing unworkable to start with. This time, I don't think they're trying to do it without having a sunset provision so that, you know, it wouldn't sunset or have to be reinitiated and passed by Congress, you know, in the future once they pass it. But I don't think they're going to have the votes to do that.
Yeah. Well, what about including AR-15s in this legislation? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, the AR-15 is a semi-automatic rifle that only fires one bullet for each, you know, pull of the trigger, just like any other semi-automatic firearm. What they're trying to do, though, is under the guise of assault weapons, which these really aren't assault weapons, because an assault weapon really is a firearm that fires fully automatic or has selective fire that you can still make it fire fully automatic. And so what they're trying to do is confuse the public with this and then define an assault rifle basically as any semi-automatic firearm, as they just did in an initiative that passed in Washington State, so that now virtually every semi-automatic firearm is considered an assault weapon, and if you're between 18 and 20 years old, you're not allowed to own one anymore. So this is what we're up against, what we're facing, is this expanded definition so they can try and get rid of all semi-automatic firearms.
Right. So which firearms belong in the assault weapons category, if you were to name them for people?
An M16, something that would fire fully automatic, which quite frankly is not a sold to civilians right now to begin with. So, I mean, it's a matter of confusion here. These aren't really weapons of war because the military doesn't use the semi-automatic versions. They use fully automatic versions.
Right.
But again, this is part of the confusion. But I'd like to point out just this past week we had a situation in Houston, Texas, where a homeowner, five people in night came in to broke into his house in a home invasion, and they were armed. And he grabbed his AK-47, which is also considered to be an assault rifle, and his 30-round magazine. And he was able to kill three of the intruders and wound two for the police to come and arrest.
Yes.
If he didn't have a so-called AK-47 or a 30-round magazine, he and his family would probably be dead now instead of the bad guys. So again, the anti-gunners don't want to talk about that. They only talk about when a gun is misused. They will never look at the good side of guns or the other side of the equation to get a good public policy answer to show, in fact, that guns do save lives.
Well, and that's been shown over and over and over again. Anecdotally, we see these stories come up. You know, it seems every few weeks, Alan, there's something that comes up in the news showing why it's so important that the Second Amendment is upheld and that average citizens have the ability to defend themselves. And this makes total sense. There's more to talk about. We'll come back with Alan Gottlieb from the Second Amendment Foundation. You're listening to Janet Meffer today. Don't go away. Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to your health care? As a Christian, are you looking for health care that doesn't violate your morals and convictions? Well, we're happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of like-minded Christians who work together to pay for their medical costs. It allows you to decide how, when, and where you will access health care so you can make the best choice for you and your family. Starting at $199 a month for a single, up to $529 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all the kids. This is how healthcare should be. For more information, call 855-585-4237 or visit lightyourliberty.com. That's lightyourliberty.com and regain control over your healthcare costs. 855-585-4237 or lightyourliberty.com. Together, we're changing healthcare for good.
From Sky Pass Entertainment comes The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story. When speculation mounts that a local missionary is converting locals to Christianity in India, a journalist must choose between his own ambition and the truth.
You can't make any mistakes. They have this law for a reason.
I know. We must pray.
Based on the true story, The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13. In theaters February 1st. More information is available at theleastofthese.movie.
What would happen if conservative evangelical churches began to embrace queer theology? Do we really want to find out? Join me, Janet Mefford, at the upcoming God's Voice Conference, February 22nd and 23rd in Oklahoma City. Find out how sexual radicals are working to undermine sound doctrine in our churches and how to stand on God's word at this critical time. Come stand with us at the God's Voice Conference. Register now at godsvoice.us. That's godsvoice.us. We'll see you there. Welcome back to Janet Mefford. Today, Alan Gottlieb is my guest, founder and executive vice president of the Second Amendment Foundation. And we've been talking about the suit that they have filed over Missouri's firearms prohibition on residents who are foster parents or want to be foster parents. And we've also been discussing some of the new action in Congress. Now that we have a new Congress, the liberals are going after the guns again. And they have this proposition for the assault weapons ban of 2019. This is an updated bill. They want to ban the sale, transfer, manufacture and importation of what they call military-style assault weapons and high-capacity ammunition magazines. Now, Alan, what about the magazine angle on this bill? What do you make of that? Getting rid of high-capacity ammunition magazines that hold more than 10 rounds, how will that affect gun owners? And if so, is it negative in any way? How do you see it?
Yes, I do think it's negative, Janet. First of all, I don't call them high-capacity magazines. I call them standard-capacity magazines. And what they're trying to do is give us limited-capacity magazines, like, you know, in places now where they've limited you to 5 rounds or 7 rounds is all you can have. And again, like I pointed out before the break, in Houston, Texas, if a gentleman didn't have a 3-round magazine, he and his family would be dead right now when the home invasion of 5 armed criminals broke into their house, you know, in the evening.
Right.
So, sometimes you need a higher capacity magazine, and it's obviously very negative when you ban these things. So obviously we oppose that. I mean, it's their way of trying to limit your Second Amendment rights one way or the other. Rather than going after the bad guys or doing things that might make us all safer, they want to take our means of self-defense away and make us all much more vulnerable.
Yeah, that's the danger there. Now, they've also reintroduced the Background Check Expansion Act to expand federal background checks to all gun sales. What do you make of that measure, Alan?
Well, I'm going to be honest. I don't really have a problem with background checks if they're done right, quickly, and fairly. My problem is the way they've written these laws. It's really not about background checks. It's about a national universal registration system so that they can know who every gun owner is and every gun you own.
Yeah.
And that's what's written into the laws, and that's what disturbs me because it's a bait and switch. They're not even being intellectually honest about this at all.
What is their deal here? Because they're saying that under current federal law, you have private sellers, unlicensed private sellers, not required to conduct background checks. So they are putting out to the public, hey, you can have some bad guy come and get away with buying firearms and then go out and kill a bunch of school children. What is the best Second Amendment response to that particular argument?
Well, first of all, if he's a bad guy and he's out on the street and he's trying to buy a gun, you know, illegally, so to speak, he shouldn't be allowed to be out on the street to begin with.
Right.
I mean, and so to protect it, not only our Second Amendment rights, but all of our rights, we need to do something about that. If you don't do anything about that and you try to criminalize the lawful sale of a firearm to a lawful person, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
And where they write these laws, it would basically be, you know, if I want to sell or give a gun to my brother-in-law, it'd be illegal if I didn't go to a licensed gun dealer and pay a fee, for the dealer to transfer it to him. Likewise, quite frankly, these laws get crazy because if I want to lend a gun to a friend to go shooting or go hunting, or even if he comes and visits my state and he wants the gun to protect himself, under these laws, I can't do that unless I go to a licensed gun dealer, pay a fee so that he can have the gun. And then when I want to get my gun back, pay another fee to transfer it back to me again, that we do another background check on me. This whole thing doesn't make any sense. Criminals don't get their guns this way anyway. They get them on the black market. They get them by stealing them. We already know this, you know. And so the problem is these laws aren't effective. They don't work. All they do is make it more difficult for law-abiding people to exercise their constitutional rights. And that's my problem.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And when they say that research indicates as many as a quarter of all gun sales in the U.S. may occur without a background check, my question would be, yeah, but what is the percentage of those who buy guns without a background check who actually go out and commit gun crimes? I mean, is that not an important element of considering whether or not to institute further background checks? How many criminals, in other words, are created because we don't have background checks the way they want them to be implemented?
Janet, that is the great question that you just asked, so to speak, because it's less than 1%. And again, when you're dealing with less than 1% of somebody misusing something, you don't take away the other 99.5% of people's rights.
Yeah.
And that's what we're dealing with in these cases, because what it is their ultimate goal is for gun prohibition. And, you know, and look at the people who sponsor these. You mentioned Dianne Feinstein. She's the one who said last time she tried to pass one of these, she had the votes. She'd say, Mr. America, turn all those guns in right now. We're going to come and confiscate them. If she had her way, she's admitted it. Yeah. So we know where they're coming from.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you look at what she did, you know, Feinstein did in San Francisco. I mean, she had to have that overturned, didn't she? Basically confiscating guns in San Francisco.
Yes, that was a Second Amendment Foundation lawsuit as well that knocked out her handgun ban when she was mayor of San Francisco. And the hypocrisy of it all is while she was banning handguns, she owned one and had a permit to carry it concealed, but didn't want anybody else to have one. Oh, hypocrisy is amazing.
Goodness. Well, good for you guys for going after her. This is the thing. When we talk about, we who support the Second Amendment, talk about the dangers of where these radicals want to take the United States and how they really are working toward the goal of gun confiscation. There are a lot of people who look at us and roll their eyes and say, oh, you're such a conspiracy theorist on this. But what is the evidence, Alan, that actually is where some of these people want to take America?
Well, the intellectually honest ones on the other side, those who oppose gun rights, admit that's what they want to do. It's the wishy-washy ones that want to straddle things. I support the Second Amendment, but
yeah,
those are the ones that don't want to admit it because they don't want to alienate all the voters out there. But if I can, Janet, I want to point out that about 80% of the case law protecting Second Amendment rights has been won by the Second Amendment Foundation and our attorneys. And just recently, I would like to point out how important this is. We filed a case, McDonald versus Chicago, that knocked out the ban on handguns in Chicago and won.
Yep.
We then filed against the city of Chicago, Ezell 1 and Ezell 2, which knocked out the ban on gun ranges, you know, and regulations that make gun ranges impossible to have in the city of Chicago. And then in Illinois, I'm sticking in Illinois for a reason, we also filed Moore versus Madigan, that we won, that knocked out their ban on being able to carry a firearm for self-protection outside your own home. Well, just 2 weeks ago, a woman on the way to work at a bus stop in the morning was attacked by a 19-year-old, and she pulled out her handgun and shot him and saved her own life.
Wow.
So I'm really proud of the work we're doing because we're actually saving these people's lives and keeping people alive and giving them means for self-defense. I'm very proud of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is the thing. When you see these areas of the country where there is such strict gun control, and you look in particular at my hometown of Chicago, and you see the homicide rate there, they're an argument against their own ideology. I mean, when you have that many people murdering people with guns, how come the gun control isn't working? And a lot of progressives don't even want to go there. They don't want to talk about it. They just want the guns gone. But what is a good way to engage a progressive and say, this is why gun control doesn't ultimately work and why it's a terrible idea in addition to being an unconstitutional one?
Well, sometimes with progressives, it's a little hard to argue because they don't want to look at the facts at all. They're working off emotion. I mean, none of us like to see, you know, somebody's life taken or a gun misused. But they don't look at the data that shows at a minimum that based on surveys and studies, over 800,000 times a year a person uses a firearm for self-defense to protect themselves, their family, and their property from criminal attack. And in all honesty, in only about 1% of the cases, is the gun ever even fired. The mere presence of the gun diffuses. The rapist leaves as quickly as he attacked, or the burglar leaves your house as quickly as he entered. So, I mean, guns have a very good purpose for self-defense. That's why so many people own them. I mean, if guns weren't good for self-defense, you know, our police wouldn't be carrying them.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So you are concerned, I know, as you said, about the first bill we discussed, that it could be attached to some other piece of legislation. I mean, how likely do you think that really is? Because obviously we have Democrat control of the House now, but Republicans still control the Senate. Are you expecting that any of these measures will make any progress in the next couple of years?
Well, there's no doubt that Nancy Pelosi, as the new Speaker of the House, is very devious and sneaky. And if she can get a bill from the House attached on as an amendment to something that the Senate passed and the Senate wants, it makes it much more harder for us to fight it. And we've seen other gun control get pushed and passed that way in the past. And so we got to, you know, be really vigilant. When it gets put on as an amendment like that, there's no extra hearings in the House. You can't try and lobby against it. It makes it rather difficult. So we gun owners this year need to be extremely vigilant, not just on the federal level. But we also have a lot of state houses in the last election that changed from being, you know, red control, so to speak, to blue control.
Right.
And anti-gunners are in some states now in control of both houses of the legislature and the governor's office. In those states, we have our work cut out for us as well.
Well, you certainly do. Well, it's good that you're there, and people can check out your website at saf.org. That's the Second Amendment Foundation's website, saf.org, and you can keep up to date on what's been going on and the attacks on the Second Amendment and your freedoms as an American citizen. Alan Gottlieb, so good to talk to you, Alan. Thanks a lot for being with us.
My pleasure, Janet.
All right. God bless you. Thanks again for being here, and we appreciate you guys very much. SAF.org, that's the Second Amendment Foundation. And this hour of Janet Mefford Today is brought to you by SkyPass Entertainment's The Least of These, The Graham Stain Story, rated PG-13, may be inappropriate for children under 13, in theaters February 1st. More information is available at theleastofthese.movie. Thanks for joining us on Janet Mefford Today. We'll see you next time.